You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In March, the murder of three people associated with the U.S. Consulate General in Ciudad Juarez was headline news, but that's because they were a bit more prominent than the nearly 5,000 people who've been murdered in the Mexican border town since 2007. With its economy in shambles and a thriving drug trade, what's happening at Juarez is no less than the disintegration of civil society. Award-winning author and journalist Charles Bowden risked his own life to document what's happening there, and he tells us about it in his haunting new book called Murder City, Ciudad Juarez, and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields. It's published by Nation Books. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
5,000 murders in 3.5 years is a staggering number. What was the murder rate in Juarez last year?
Last year, there were 2,753 murders.
So over half of that.
And there were 30 arrests for murder. I'm not saying convictions, 30 arrests. I mean, it's a free sport there. You can kill anybody you want.
Now, I visited the city a number of times in the late 80s, and it struck me as a rather nice place for a border town, thriving on American tourist dollars. Was it dangerous then? Was I just totally oblivious?
No, it wasn't dangerous then. Several things changed it. One was obviously growing poverty as more and more factories came and didn't pay people anything. The second thing was the movement of the cocaine belt from Florida to Mexico, which exploded the income of the cartels. For example, by 1995, DEA figured the Juarez cartel was earning $12 billion a year. Well, that changes the climate.
$12 billion is a lot of money.
It is in my neighborhood, but, not on Wall Street. I mean, it's chump change, but...
I don't know whether the guys in Juarez are giving themselves big bonuses. How does Juarez... Why is it Juarez and not some of the other Mexican border towns?
Well, it isn't just Juarez. Juarez is the most violent. That's correct. But this violence is spreading throughout the country. It's in many states in the country, and a lot of it is unreported. There's no reporting what's going on in the rural areas where it's just a shooting gallery. I mean, good God. 2 weeks ago in the tourist town of Creel, which was the approach to the Copper Canyon, their Grand Canyon.
Does the railroad still go over Copper Canyon?
Yes, it does, but a convoy of cars arrived, which looked remarkably in the video like state policemen, took over the town for 90 minutes, executed a family of 10, and then calmly drove away. It's all on film. Mm. I mean, the law is broken down. Tijuana is dangerous. Michoacan's dangerous. I mean, there's a lot of killing. Guerrero, which is where Acapulco is, and on and on. It's not just Juarez, but Juarez is the most violent for various reasons, that part of it is not simply drugs. I mean, oh my God, we're fighting a drug war, whatever that is. Juarez, I think, had reached a boiling point of poverty and desperation. There are 500 to 900 street gangs there. These kids are armed, and they kill. There's 100,000 jobs have been lost. Nobody, has a future. 25% of the houses have been abandoned in the last 18 months. 40% of the businesses have closed. Everybody's paying extortion. Everybody's paying ransom. And Juarez now has a murder rate of about 200 per 100,000. For example, the U.S. runs, 9-10 per 100,000. But there are sections of Juarez where the murder rate's like 1,600 per 100,000.
It's the second most dangerous city in the world after Caracas?
No, it's more dangerous now. Caracas is a wannabe. It's only 132 per 100,000. I mean,
and
get
Baghdad
on the road, You've got to whack more people.
And Baghdad, it sounds almost safe.
Yeah, correct. Look, there isn't a precedent for Juarez in modern times.
Well, you mentioned that there are no jobs. Wasn't NAFTA supposed to improve the working conditions?
Well, yes. Bush won, and President Bill Clinton said NAFTA would be the solution. It would end illegal immigration. It would raise the Mexican economy and create all these jobs. Well, I'm afraid I'll have to tell you the truth. They were absolutely wrong. It triggered the biggest human migration on Earth, the flight of the Mexican poor. If you look at any chart of apprehensions by the Border Patrol, starting in 1994, it takes off like a Roman skyrocket when NAFTA kicks in, and it's because it destroyed peasant agriculture, couldn't compete with American agribusiness, destroyed small industry, couldn't compete with the U.S. and Asia.
So Ross Perot was exactly wrong when he said the sucking sound of jobs going out of the country. The sucking sounds were actually coming in the other direction.
Well, no, he was half right. He needed a double suck there. There are 400 foreign factories in Juarez, for example. Electrolux is in Juarez. A few years back, unless it's changed, the fulfillment office of the New Yorker magazine was in Juarez, and on and on. That the jobs were destroyed here, but the fact is the jobs there can't sustain people. These plants have a turnover of 100 to 200% a year in a nation of poverty. You can't live on the jobs.
Why? Don't they pay?
No. Well, look, you know, if you work hard and you seem like a nice guy, we'll start you at 40 a week. Then after you've been there a few years, you'll get up to 75 a week, and you'll be living in a city where the cost of living is 90% of living in a U.S. city. Now, if you want to try that from 75 a week, we got a job for you. And well, the Mexicans can't make it. You go to Colonia Slum, Barrios there, where everybody there is working in an American factory, a maquiladora. There'll be three or four to a house. The house will be made out of cardboard and wood pallets. There'll be no water. It has to be delivered. The electricity's stolen off wires. And you're looking at totally employed American employees.
And this is directly across a very unimagined line from El Paso, a rather successful booming city.
Yes. That El Paso relatively is prosperous. Look, if you stand in El Paso, unless you really know, you can't tell where one city ends and the other begins. It looks like a continuous city. Now, the violence in Juarez, they've killed about 660 so far this year, is remarkable in that El Paso has had two murders this year. Now, El Paso is overwhelmingly Mexican-American, at least 80%. But apparently, if you give people a decent police department, a job where they can, you know, pay their rent and have food, they get less violent.
My guest is Charles Bowden, who's written a book called Murder City, Ciudad Juarez, and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields. It's published by Nation Books. You write, you mentioned earlier the drugs and the street gangs. Should we distinguish between the two?
Not really. Look, it's a culture of violence. The cartels control import-export. I mean, you know, they're like multinationals. The street gangs are feral kids. There's a high school in Juarez for every 500,000 people, and you have to pay to go to high school. 50% of the adolescents there neither have a job nor are going to school. So, you know, they take the best option, stealing and killing.
And you write that young men in Juarez aspire to work as contract killers.
Well, they did a university study there. The Mexicans, and to their horror, found in the state of Chihuahua, Juarez is the largest city, 40% of the young males wanted to become contract killers.
40%. Well, that means that people who would not want to under other circumstances see this as an attractive job.
Yeah, and they know they're going to die. Look, you go into the life, you're not going to live forever. You're going to be dead by the time you're 20, 25. But at least you have a life for a while. They see their parents burning their lives away working at these jobs that never pay enough. And they think, you know, I want something else. These kids they're like dead eyes to look at them. And, of course, drug use in Juarez now is massive. The clinics are estimated 200,000 addicts in the city, nobody knows. Drugs are cheap. In February 2008, I was talking to a gang leader, and I said, how much for a fix of heroin? And he said, $2.50 U.S.
Wow.
You know.
Is the killing being done primarily by the drug cartels and the street gangs?
Well, look, the cartels are a miniature part of the killing, contrary to what our government says. There's 11,000 Army personnel and police and federal police there. They're doing killing. The state police do killing. The city police do killing. The gangs do killing. You know, that the Mexican government says that 90% of the people killed are in the drug business. Well, that's kind of meaningless. I mean, 90% of the people, I'll guarantee you, 90% of the people getting butchered there are just poor people that don't have any money.
Well, you said that you have to pay to go to school. It seems to me that other people must have noticed that. How come the government just hasn't opened up free schools?
Mexico has the worst distribution of income in Latin America. It's got the richest man in the world, Carlos Slim, who owns everything, including a chunk of the New York Times. And with very little effort, I'm sure we could find the poorest man in the world in Mexico. This is a Marxist cartoon, the country. We pretend it isn't that way.
But Mexico City seems like a nice place to be. Guernavaca, Oaxaca.
Look, there are these sanctuaries. You know, the White House is nice, too, in Washington. I mean, this is, you're talking about a bubble. For the average Mexican, things have been going backwards since the early 80s. Do you think that suddenly they discovered that wages are higher in the United States and came north? We now have 10 or 15 million people here that functionally are refugees from a doomed future. That's why they came north. Now, what we've got in this country is a theology. I know we have separation of church and state, but apparently it doesn't cover the economists. It's called free trade, whatever that means. It's absolutely unexamined. It's an act of faith. The Free Trade Treaty, NAFTA, with Canada, Mexico, the United States, was supposed to magically, Adam Smith's invisible hand, fix this. Well, it didn't fix it. It started strangling the Mexican people, and they lurched north. Then you have a collapsing of Mexican economy now. You know, we get a cold, they get pneumonia. And then the war, the fight for survival gets even stronger. And you got to face the fact that remittances, these people here illegally sending money home, that's $20, $25 billion a year. It's the second largest source of foreign currency in Mexico. Drugs are $30, $50 billion a year.
And what happened to all the oil?
Well, it's something that nobody ever talks about. 40% of the federal budget in Mexico is oil. The president of Mexico says it'll all be gone in 9 years. Now, if you were the Mexican army fighting for power, would you say, I want to go out and seize an oil well, or I want to seize a cartel? The other thing your listeners should realize is our government is financing this drug war, $500 million a year, under Plan Morita. It's a very odd war. As of this morning, basically, it's slaughtered 23,000 Mexicans in 36 months. But the army is valiantly fighting the war, has lost 100 men. You have to wonder what their real adversaries are. And we have this image of the cartels, you know, they have grenade launchers and all this. Well, they don't hurt the soldiers. And the soldiers, I don't think, hurt them.
And we'll get into that in a moment. But when these contract killers go out, do they usually know who they're working for and why they're killing someone?
Sometimes, but not usually. It's immaterial. They don't know why they're going to kill you. You're just a target. I mean, I spent extensive time interviewing one of their killers. And they don't. The guy I interviewed worked for the cartels for 20 years as a contract killer, probably killed 500 people, and was never sure who he worked for.
In reading the book, the phrase that Hannah Arendt came up with to describe Adolf Eichmann, the banality of evil, came to mind. Is that what we're seeing here?
I don't know if I'd use the term. Look, I understand why she used it, and I don't really object to it. But what you have to understand is this death isn't coming from monsters. It's coming from normal people. This is what happens in these kind of circumstances. The guy I have in the book, the Sicario, who I spent a lot of time with, he's certainly just as normal as I am. I mean, there's nothing strange about him, except he makes his living murdering people and torturing them, and did it for 20 years. I should tell your listeners, he's also a state police commander and was trained by the U.S. FBI, so he knows what he's doing.
My guest is Charles Bowden, whose book, Murder City, Ciudad Juarez, and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields, is published by Nation Books. We'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with Charles Bowden, whose book, Murder City, Ciudad Juarez, and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields, is published by Nation Books. You write, regardless of your station in life, you may vanish or be murdered. So is everyone at risk? You make it sound like just walking down the street in Juarez is the equivalent of taking your life in your own hands.
Yes and no. I mean, obviously a million people get out of bed there every morning and most of them make it to sundown. But there's no center to the violence anymore. It's not stay out of that neighborhood. There's no center to the people who get killed. It's not, well, that kind of people. That it can happen to anyone, anywhere. That the rich have moved to El Paso now because they can cross. There's 30 to 60,000 new residents in El Paso, and it's the flight of the rich, taking their money with them.
And I'm assuming it's also a brain drain.
Well,
because they're more educated.
I'll raise a point that nobody agrees with me on, so you can disagree. The real brain drain of Mexico is the flight of the poor entering this country illegally. These are ignorant people with no education. But by God, if you can get out of bed in Oaxaca and you've never been 50 miles from your village, and you can go through a 20,000-man standing army of Border Patrol agents here and make it to Chicago and make a living in a strange country, that's what Mexico needs. They are literally losing the people since they hold them in contempt, the short, dark brown people that could fix their country. Because they come here and start new lives. They did a study in Minneapolis, illegals. The illegal community within 5 years, 20% had home ownership. I mean, these are the building blocks of fixing something. And they're rejecting them. They're treating them like garbage they ship north.
You have a description of a typical Juarez killing scene in the book. Could you read that for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It's 1 p.m. on Easter Sunday. And in a street of maquila workers, a crowd gathers to look at a corpse. The guy's 19 and belongs to a gang. A hole in his head has blown out one eye. Members of the opposing gang sit in the bed of a police pickup truck while one cop fills out a form. I stare at a young gang kid. As a photographer raises his camera, he pulls his sweatshirt up to cover his face. His eyes are dead and empty. Maybe the gaze left by too much glue and paint sniffing. But his middle fingers flash a gang sign, and they are covered with blood. A car stops. Three young girls, 12 or 13, race across the street as the father keeps the motor idling. They hold hands as they skip into the crowd and form a smiling chorus line of capri pants and tube tops. This has become the norm. Kids, parents, babes in arm, all show up on the killing grounds. Some of the people bring their dogs. Children make videos, snap photographs. Sometimes the kids get a bonus, since the bodies now and then are of children. It is now 1:30 p.m., and suddenly the police race away with the body. Another killing has been called in. The city morgue is overwhelmed. By midnight, there will have been 103 murders in Juarez in March. 40 bodies are tossed into a common grave due to a lack of space, and because the families either do not claim the corpses or can't even afford a funeral.
So who winds up being killed? Does it really matter? Are the wealthy murdered too, or are they more likely to be kidnapped?
Well, the wealthy tend not to get murdered because they travel with bodyguards in convoys, and they tend to sleep now in El Paso.
Well, should I assume that most of the people who were killed were in some way involved with the gangs or in drugs?
Yes and no. Here's who's getting killed. You stand on a street corner in a poor neighborhood. You're selling a newspaper. If the driver pulls up and he also wants a little packet of cocaine, you sell that. Now, I covered a murder, that exact murder, in a poor barrio where everybody worked in these American or European factories for low wages. And this guy was murdered selling the newspaper, standing on a traffic island at noon in broad daylight. Two guys walked up, just blew his head off and walked away. And the reason is, he was probably making $300 a week selling his little packets of drugs. He was an addict, because I knew people in the neighborhood. Now, if you think that's a cartel war and he's a big capo, go ahead. This is a slaughter of the poor in a city where there's no jobs now anyway.
And people can do it because there also are no consequences.
Well, none. I mean, nobody's arrested and nobody's convicted.
Well, is that because, as you suggested earlier, the police and the military are also engaged in all of this? It's been suggested that if Mexican police were paid a little better than, I think, a $14,000 starting salary, they might not be so open to taking bribes and then engaging in these other activities.
That would certainly help, but the fact is, if they if they were paid better and started enforcing the law, they'd be killed. You've got a multi-billion-dollar business there that wants to be left alone. The mistake of our policymakers here, among many, is they keep talking, will Mexico become a narco state? The drug industry doesn't want to be the government. They just want to be left alone. They're not trying to take over the government. They just kill anybody that interferes with them. And so that includes sometimes the police. Some of the police forces have been getting slaughtered because they were supporting the wrong organization. The biggest criminal organization in the country isn't the drug cartels. It's the Mexican army, 250,000 strong. That's a hell of a gang.
A listener wondered whether there is a connection between the drug lords and the government.
Well, absolutely. And the U.S. government knows it and won't admit it. DEA knows it. Do you think a country where that the rich run, where a fabled 200 families seem to own everything, is going to let a business that earns $30 to $50 billion a year run without their cut? I mean, that's just silly. That there isn't a politician or a police force in Mexico that isn't bathing in drug money, because that's the money that's around. And we won't admit it.
My guest is Charles Bowden. His book, Murder City, Ciudad Juarez and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields, published by Nation Books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Women are also targets. Isn't there a high rate of abuse against women in Juarez? There was a string of killings. As far as I know, nobody has ever really figured out who's doing the killing and why.
Let me address that, because this has become a damn cottage industry in this country, and I think it's an act of gutlessness. The murder rate of women in Juarez is the same as in all of Mexico, about 10% of the homicides. It is a way to ignore everything I've been saying up to here. But look at the country. We created a country in part through our policies full of poverty. We've created a country full of violence because we won't let our citizens have drugs. Women get killed also. The other point I think should be addressed is that people that focus on these murders, and they never focus on the poverty or anything else there, people that focus on these murders keep saying these cases haven't been solved. No murder's solved in Juarez, ever. I don't care who the hell you killed, it's not going to be solved. There's no investigation.
What about the story of Miss Sinaloa, who is one of the victims of a kidnapping and rape?
She was a beauty queen who came from Sinaloa to a big party in Juarez. And the city police raped her for 3 days, and she lost her mind. She's in the book. But what that tells you is about the real treatment of women in Mexico, that you can rape women there, beat them, and nothing will happen to you. It's a different culture. It's not because of the drug world. That's a real problem. A friend of mine, who's now passed away, started the first women's shelter in Juarez, Casa Amiga. Esther Chavez Cano, died Christmas Day. That clinic, the only one in the city, is treating 30,000 women a year for beatings and rapes. I agree with that. That is a real problem, and it's something only Mexicans can change. Frankly, if we may give them advice, that isn't going to change the way their mores.
Not all members of the Juarez populace are involved in the killing, and aren't some trying to find solutions to the problem? There's a man you refer to as El Pastor.
Yeah, he's a remarkable guy, a former drug addict, big, brawny guy. He was an illegal worker here for 15 years, so we booted him out of the country after he served his prison term. He scoops up the street people, the kind of people whose brains have been destroyed by glue and paint, go-go dancers that have lost their mind. And he built with his own hands a kind of asylum on the edge of the city. There's 110 out of them, 110 people out there. He recently got electricity. It still has no water. There's essentially no medicine and zero government support. And the reason those 110 people are there is there is no place for those people in a city of a million. There is no government institution that takes care of them. And so he's created a kind of counterculture. Look at Esther Chavez created this shelter. There are a lot of people there trying to do things, but you can't do things very easily in a society of this level of violence where the government's corrupt and where our government gets in bed with their government.
Now, you have had a fair amount of contact with some of these people. You had a 5-day party you attended with 200 armed killers.
It was a wedding.
Uh-huh. And they all had guns?
Yeah. Yeah, the federal police were there, too. They were the only ones that threatened to kill me because I was making notes.
So what did they think of you and what you would do?
Well, they thought I was making notes at a drug party. And what saved my life was the guy who was getting married. He was a capo in the Juarez cartel. He says, no, don't kill him. He's my little historian.
Well, you must have told people something to get them to give you their stories because you get some incredible stories here.
Well, it took years. You know, like I've been in the drug world a long time, inadvertently, and you build up relationships. That's how I got to the Sicario. I called in a big favor because instead of people talking about violence, evil, et cetera, I wanted somebody from the other side to speak, interview with a vampire, as it were. And so I called in a favor, and it turned out, now it's been weeks with this guy interviewing him, because I wanted to learn. And he was reluctant to talk, and once he started talking, he couldn't stop speaking because he'd never been able to reveal his real nature to anyone and what he did.
This was a cop who retired?
He's now a fugitive. The Juarez cartel has a $250,000 contract on his head, which made it a little dicey meeting him. Here's how it works. He was trained, went through their police academies, trained by the U.S. FBI. He becomes a comandante, a commander of the state police unit, the anti-kidnapping unit. What his unit does is kidnap people, torture and kill them, and collect the ransom. That's how it works. And no, he isn't a bad apple. He was recruited and paid for to go through the police academy by the Juarez cartel. They don't corrupt cops. They grow them. Mm-hmm. He's getting $100 a month or something to go through the police academy. The Juarez cartel's sending him $1,000 a week to go there.
What about religion? Mexico is a very religious country. Doesn't that play any role in this?
Yes. It's a very Catholic country, and the real role it plays, the thing that stuns you with the Mexican people, is their ability to endure and go on. That they have a deep faith, but their faith can't stop the killing and their faith can't bring back the dead. That, look at, they're powerless functionally. I mean, what are they supposed to do? It's a country where guns are outlawed and you get machine gun. It's a place where the army attacks you instead of protects you. It's a place no Mexican in trouble calls a cop. That just doubles the trouble. And they're trying to make a living. And these factories are slave factories, functionally. So they do the best they can. I won't say they're heroes to me, but by God, I have to admire their ability to carry on.
We have a number of comments from listeners. Richard in Manhattan wonders if legalizing drugs would have any impact on the violence now.
Well, of course it would. It would start with, we could stop being the champ in the world with the largest prison population per capita. Drugs are functionally worthless. I mean, they're cheap to produce. It would starve off the business. In the short run, there'd be more violence because, frankly, people are used to making a lot of money and carrying machine guns aren't going to go apply for a job as a Walmart greeter. We went through the same thing here when we ended Prohibition in the early 30s. But in the long run, yes, it would reduce the problem. Look, I'll make it simple. We have, at most, a public health problem, people consuming substances we think are bad for them. But instead of sending the doctor, we sent the police. And it's blown up in our face. It's been going on for 40 years here since the Nixon administration. And I think it's not simply a failure. It's a disaster.
You suggested earlier that what's going on in Juarez is spreading to other cities. Do you think that this could become an international thing, or is this unique to Mexico?
No, I think it'll spread. And by spread, I don't just simply mean drugs. I mean that we're producing a lot of poor people. I mean our foreign policy called free trade isn't producing happy middle-class people, nor is it producing middle-class people here. It's destroying them. And I think when you do that, it blows up in your face that poverty isn't a minor thing. If you don't give someone a future, they'll go out and try and create one themselves. And frankly, if they don't go to Harvard, they might use a gun instead of a Bible.
Although I cannot see this Congress or any Congress in the near future changing the free trade policy.
You tell me the day you thought you'd see gay marriage, you know, that I get a little tired of this. Nothing will change. Look, this policy is bankrupting us financially. It's our biggest growth industry is putting our fellow citizens in cages because they ingest things we don't approve of. It's creating a police state. It will eventually end. It won't be easy, but it will end. And no, I don't think drugs are good for you, but so what? That's your problem if you want to take them, not mine.
Another caller asked if you fear for your life in writing this book.
No, and I'll tell you why. I start with, obviously, if you've been listening carefully, I'm a fool. But look at American reporters get a few wild moments down there, but Mexican reporters are dying. It's the most dangerous, just about the most dangerous place in the world to be a reporter. This book is dedicated to a reporter butchered in Juarez in front of his 8-year-old child. That isn't the risk. And frankly, I don't give a damn if U.S. reporters get killed. If you're a reporter, you're supposed to go toward the story. If you're a fireman, you run toward the fire. If you're sane, you run away from a fire. But no, it's not that dangerous. What it is terribly depressing. I never want to go through another 36 months while 5,000 people are slaughtered in a city.
So have you left Juarez?
I'm trying to. I mean, I've been trying to extricate myself from this for years. That I think now I can finally pull it off, and I'll tell you why. Because it's gotten so bad, straight media's going there. And so, you know, I can go to the whiskey bars and start reading poetry again and let the New York Times take over.
Charles Bowden's book, Murder City, Ciudad Juarez and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields, published by Nation Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.